This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. We have a special episode today featuring Ann McGeorge, a magnificent public accounting partner that now serves on the board and works with a private equity fund and serves on several boards with them. And also Amber Walsh, who serves as the national chair of the McGuire's healthcare practice and is a magnificent leader herself and works with a ton of private equity funds, particularly in the healthcare space. We're going to talk today about really career advice and leadership advice for aspiring women leaders at the intersection of healthcare and finance and more. I'm going to ask each Ann and Amber to introduce themselves. Ann, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure thing, Scott, and thanks for having me. So I spent about 33 years in the big public accounting firms, starting my career at KPMG, then moving to Arthur Andersen, then Deloitte, and in the last 11 years, leading the global healthcare practice for Grant Thornton. So in that span, I learned a lot about the big public accounting firms. And Scott, you know, if it doesn't work out in retirement, I can always write a book about the big accounting firms.
And take one moment on the differences in working at the very largest of the big accounting firms versus Grant Thornton, which is also a remarkable public accounting firm, but one size smaller. Any differences in culture or how that felt or anything about that part of your career that you could comment on?
Well, and it's interesting that you should ask that because really all the accounting firms and the law firms also, they all have their unique cultures. So I think it's important, you know, as you go through the interview process, if you're deciding where to go to work, to really assess, you know, how people treat each other, how they're treating you, how they treat the administrative staff, because a culture, and especially a culture of collegiality, for me was really, really important. So the firms I worked for had that, others do as well, but there are cultural differences. The main differences between the big ones and maybe the not so big could be the training and the types of clients that you work on. So the training's just outstanding at the large firms and always a great place for people to start their careers. So that's kind of how I look at it. There's not a bad answer, and they're all really great firms.
And two more quick questions for you, and then I'll move to Amber and work the introduction part of the discussion with Amber. How did you end up working in healthcare as opposed to just accounting? How did your practice evolve to be healthcare focused? And then second is, what are you doing today that you've sort of retired from the public accounting firms, but you're far from retired? What are you doing today?
Well, I got into healthcare. I actually wanted to get into the clinical side of healthcare, but I think I just wasn't smart enough. So after getting a D in organic chemistry, I think I decided that maybe the sciences were not for me. So I took an accounting class and absolutely loved it and seemed to excel in it. But I'd kind of found my calling. So I thought I'd combine the both of them, where I'd be an accountant, but I'd also work on healthcare. And that would be the next best thing to actually being a physician or a pharmacist or whatever. So that's kind of how I got into it, sort of surreptitiously, if you will. Since I've retired, what I kind of wanted to do in my retirement, and my advice when we get to that point, is to have a plan for your retirement, because it's as important as your career. So my kind of high-level plan was that I wanted to spend a third, a third, and a third of my time. A third doing kind of quote-unquote work and being on corporate boards. A third giving back, and that's nonprofit work or being on a nonprofit board or teaching, as I do also. And then a third just kind of having fun and working on my golf game and visiting with kids and grandkids. So that's sort of how it's evolved, and I'm pretty excited. And sometimes those thirds get out of balance, but just like with work and work-life balance, you kind of got to tweak things so that they all stay in balance.
Thank you. And I know you also serve on a few private equity-driven company boards today. Take a moment on that. I know all in the healthcare sector, not all, but a lot of it in. Take one moment on that, too, so people get the full breadth of what you're doing today.
Absolutely. So I'm on five boards. So two are public companies, Magenta Therapeutics, which is developing therapies to make bone marrow transplants much safer and easier for patients. And bone marrow transplants, as you know, cure blood disorders like leukemia and lymphoma. The second public board is called SOC Telemedicine, and SOC stands for Specialists on Call. And it's a telemedicine platform that employs all sorts of specialists and provides specialists, sort of like locums tenens, to the hospital sector. Lots of fun, both of those boards. Then two private boards, one is a biotech, and the other is a healthcare technology company. Interesting, both of them want to go public, so I won't tell you their names right now, but that's been a lot of fun. And then the last one is a nonprofit board, probably the most rewarding, and that's an organization called Be the Match that runs the National Bone Marrow Registry that matches up patients that need bone marrow transplants with donors that are willing to donate their bone marrow to provide a life-saving transplant for a patient. Incredible board, and I'm the chairman of that board in terms of their fundraising board. So those are the boards.
Magnificent.
Lots of fun.
No, and I know there's a whole history to how you ended up so involved in bone marrow transplants, and just magnificent the work that you do both on the corporate side and the philanthropic side. It's just fantastic. Amber, let me turn to you. You are an exceptional leader, an exceptional career. Lead up a group that's literally three times the size of when I chaired that group at McGuire Woods. Talk a bit about your career and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Scott. Yes, I've been at McGuire Woods for nearly my entire 20-year career. I do exclusively healthcare transactional work. And for the past six of those years, I have chaired the department, taking over from you as one of my key mentors in my career. One of the really fun additional things that I get to do at the firm in my professional life is I also co-founded our Women in Private Equity and Finance Initiative, which you and I have talked about a lot over the years. It's very near and dear to my heart. And that's one way in which I have worked alongside Anne, and I'm really pleased to be here with both of you, my career-long mentor in you, Scott, and Anne, who I've known professionally and been so impressed with. And already in the first few minutes of this podcast, I've learned something. I'm definitely going to take away the nugget of the third, a third, a third. I love that.
Amber, take a moment on women in private equity. What I suggest, for example, to my kids, that private equity is not as daunting as it felt 20, 30 years ago. And it was just Carlyle and Blackstone. And it seemed like, oh, my God, a great, great firms, but a brutal lifestyle and just dog eat dog. And it's a very democratized world. I mean, I know women are still underrepresented, but talk about careers in private equity. Is that just a daunting thing or daunting thought today? Or is that actually something that is, you know, doesn't seem as intimidating as it might have 15, 20 years ago?
Yeah, I definitely think it is much more attainable and sustainable as a career for a young woman, but also a woman as she is looking at different opportunities for advancement and leadership throughout her career. It is no longer a career just for a young person, and no longer a career just for a certain demography. And there's been a real concerted effort within the industry to fill the really, really noticeable gaps in representation within the private equity industry. And while there's certainly a very, very long way to go in terms of investment professionals who are women and who are minorities, there has been a real concerted effort, and all of the things that have been done from business schools up through the firms and their own internships programs and retention mechanisms, it has definitely made it a much more viable career for a woman that I think should absolutely be strongly considered, because even though I'm certainly not a private equity fund investment professional myself, I'm the mere lawyer who serves the funds. I really see it as fun and with a ton of blue sky in terms of opportunities.
And take a moment, Amber. You've worked extremely hard in your career. You've also managed to work closely with your children, and quite frankly, before it was the pandemic, you had started working from home a very long time ago. So it had sort of had that, you know, background. Talk about mixing being a magnificent professional with a magnificent life as a parent, magnificent home life. What advice do you have for a professional woman trying to have both? And how do you look at that? How do you frame that? What's some of your thoughts on that?
It's not easy. And if there was a perfect playbook of you could follow these 17 steps and you would always feel good and confident about your health and your role as a mother and your role within your own particular profession and in your firm, that would be amazing. I wish that existed. I think that one of the most important things that any young woman who wants to have both a family or both her own personal goals that may not be a family, balanced with a really significant career, is to find mentors. And it's, for me personally, it was powerful and rewarding to have both female mentors and non-female mentors like yourself, that can be a really great way to ensure that you have the support system that you need. And having a support system in all areas of your life, that's not always easy to create. It is harder for some to create than not, but seeking those out, identifying who will support you in all of these areas, that's one of the most powerful things that you can do as a young woman. And that might sound hard to achieve, but there are ways of finding the right mentor.
And I might just jump in also, Amber.
A similar question, Ann. You were in public accounting when really you talk about the law firms, they are much closer to gender balance than they were. They're still not where they should be. Certainly at the leadership level, there's still a mix and it's a funnel still, but women are more and more well represented than they were. And the same thing in public accounting today versus 20, 30 years ago. Talk about 20, 30 years ago in public accounting, what it was like being a young, achieving woman professional, and then what advice you would have for young women trying to have great careers, and great lives.
Well, I would say 20, 30 years ago, especially 30 years ago, basically to be successful, you had to look like a man and dress like a man. I mean, really, we wore these little suits with these little ties. I mean, it's embarrassing to think about it now, but it was just all about kind of fitting in and doing everything that the men did. And now it's so different. And a lot of it is because of pioneering women such as Amber, such as me, such as others that have said, we can be equals and we can do just the same type of work. And we can be ourselves too. We can be our authentic selves in work. And so many organizations are embracing that because their clients kind of take the same type of mix in terms of having that sort of mix, gender mix, racial mix, et cetera. So I think the whole diversity initiative, if you want to call it that, and I hate calling it that because it shouldn't be initiative, it should just be a way of life, has really helped the path for women. And I think everything Amber said is 100% true with regard to the work-life balance. I'd add to that that there needs to be some incredible communication at home, and both partners need to be uber supportive of each other in this goal of how we're going to manage this family or these personal goals. And if that gets out of balance, that's where problems can occur. And I've mentored, men and women on this issue. And it can be incredibly important. But the public accounting firms and the law firms, and actually I have to applaud the law firms for doing a better job, I think, than the public accounting firms in kind of being first to promote the work at home initiatives and being more supportive of women, although the accounting firms are now catching up, I'm pleased to say.
And let me follow up question on post public accounting. Some people sort of plant the seeds prior to finishing their core career for what they're going to do afterwards. Some are so exhausted that they think they want to do nothing, but ultimately people need to do something if they want to stay young and vibrant and healthy and so forth. And you did a magnificent job of that. You're on four corporate boards, you're on a philanthropic board. How did you sort of make that plan, make that transition? What advice do you have for people that are 10 years younger than yourself trying to figure out what's my life going to look like post the core career. What advice do you have there?
Well, I think starting to think about that well before it actually happens is key. So whether it's 5 years, 10 years, to be thinking about kind of what you want to do after you get out of whatever this career is for you, I think is incredibly important. And I think you need to think about it and be deliberate about it and think about things you need to do now to start planting those seeds. And it might be developing relationships for people that can help you get on corporate boards if that's what you want. Developing relationships in the nonprofit world if you want to devote your afterlife to nonprofit service. Or if, you know, some people say, I don't want to do any of that. I've spent 35 years in the financial world and I want to just retire and play golf. And that is fine too, to just be thinking about what you want to do. There's a great book called Don't Retire, Rewire by a guy named Rick Mind. And it's just really fun because it helps you think about these things well before you actually retire. And begin planting those seeds. And I think that's incredibly important.
Amber, Ann, thank you very, very much. And I think that the people that I've seen really enjoy their retirements, and I wouldn't call it retirement, it's really like a secondary career for you with being on four boards and a fifth board that's the most important one. Amber, you sit on some boards, you serve as counsel on some boards, you serve on boards. How important has that been to your own perspective as a leader? And give us some thoughts around that.
Absolutely. Well, like many people, my first board experiences have been with nonprofit boards. It's a very natural place for many people to start their board service, and definitely nothing to shy away from, especially for a young person in the beginning stages of board service who really wants to dip her toe into learning about the inner workings of an effective board. It's been a really remarkable expansion of my professional life in being able to sit on the inside and see governance really at work. And most people who have sat on multiple boards have experienced boards that work well and boards that don't, and it's all a learning experience. I think Anne, I believe, has also had some similar board readiness opportunities that came our way prior to our board service. And that's something that I would encourage any young person who is interested in sitting on a board and governing and learning those skills to grab an opportunity for a board readiness program. There are several, and there are some that are specifically oriented towards women who want to be on boards and helping women to find their voice, to not only understand fiduciary duties and all the different components of how a board works and the expectation of a board member, but how to be effective and to use Anne's earlier phrase, to bring your authentic self, to make sure that your voice is being heard to further the mission of the organization on which you're serving. Those are great opportunities that I would certainly encourage anyone listening, maybe your daughter, Scott, when she gets to that point in her career. I think those opportunities are really great to grab as well.
And those have also helped you hone your professional and business judgment too, haven't they?
Absolutely. You're absolutely looking at an opportunity for an organization. You are looking at a problem that an organization is facing, a challenge, a crossroads that an organization may be at where you need to make a critical decision. And you're looking at it from a completely different lens than I've done for the past 20 years as an outside lawyer advising a board. When you are sitting in the seat yourself, you hear completely different perspectives and you make decisions for a lot of different reasons other than the legal reasons. And it has really been eye-opening and really helpful for me within the firm and the hats I wear within the firm to also have a more expanded open view for different viewpoints, but also to help get to decision making more effectively.
Thank you very much. Ann and Amber, let me ask you each one more question. You know, sort of any final thoughts you would have, pieces of advice for aspiring women leaders, any thoughts at all? Ann, let me start with you and then I'll turn to Amber.
Well, my advice, Scott, to young people starting out their profession is to first be a lifelong learner and just be a sponge. Learn everything you can from everybody you can. Secondly, I'd probably say I don't like the term lean in. I like the term jump in. So volunteer for things. Volunteer for things within your organization and outside the organization. Join a nonprofit board. It's the easiest way to get some credibility outside your organization, and it'll bring you rewards beyond what you can imagine. And pick something you're passionate about, because this is kind of nights and weekends work, if you will. And then lastly, and you've heard this before, build relationships. And women sometimes have kind of two buckets to their relationships, their personal relationships and their professional relationships. My advice would be pour both buckets into another bucket and combine those and put those buckets together, because sometimes some of your clients and your business colleagues can turn out being wonderful personal relationships as well. And they will heed very well to you in your next career and wherever they might take you. So you can build a lot of great professional relationships and personal relationships and combine them. Sometimes I think men do a better job of that. So I like to advise young women to start doing that as well.
So really, Anne, it's you mentioned the term lean and jump in to what you're doing, but also this fostering of relationships is so critical, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, you know, people have to be competent and have to relate well to others, and really leaning into those professional relationships and cultivating and so forth. It's so important to a richer professional life too, isn't it? Aside from helping one career-wise, it's really what makes the professional relationship so much more fulfilling, isn't it?
Absolutely. And especially in the private equity world, building those relationships can be critical. And it turns out, I mean, probably most of the relationships in private equity were ones that helped kind of get my board seats and my private equity work after retirement as well. So whether it's with private equity, with the nonprofit world, or whether it's with colleagues and clients within and without your organization, I think you just have to set some goals for yourself to expand your relationships and try to do that very deliberately and continuously.
Thank you. And Amber, yourself, any final thoughts, piece of advice for aspiring young women leaders?
Absolutely. Well, I know on a podcast, you can't see me smiling, but as soon as Anne started to give her pieces of advice, I started smiling so big. I could not agree more. And it's something that I similarly feel very passionately about, that a young woman in the early stages of your career take every opportunity that comes her way that is remotely related to her personal goals. You know, in addition to the reasons that you and Anne just discussed, it will expose you to new areas of interest, niches within your industry, and new people. And by taking these opportunities to do service projects, take a slightly different role on a large deal or project, to get out there and lead an initiative for your company, to basically get away from your desk, lift your head up out of the actual work, which is very, very important. But taking those opportunities will also help you to have a better understanding of how all the players in your industry fit together. So for the three of us, Scott and me, in healthcare deal making, that's how the CPA firms and insurers and consultants and law firms and all of the different players fit together to originate deals, move deals forward. And if you're not taking these opportunities to get out there, you're going to miss some of that. And I really do think that for the young listeners, at the earlier stages of their careers, they'll be pleasantly surprised at some of the things that can be learned. But by contrast, when you get more seasoned and you start to really hit your stride, you have your niche, you can be more discriminating and much more protective of your time. And you'll be able to do so with more confidence that you've explored other things, you've built your own relationships, and you really have a firm grasp in how your industry works and where you fit in. So that's why I was smiling when Anne was giving her advice, because I really do think for all those reasons, it's so, so, so true.
I think just magnificent. I want to thank Anne McGeorge, Amber Walsh for joining us today, both remarkable leaders. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your thoughts with us today for the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thank you both very much for being so gracious with your thoughts, your comments, your time. Thank you.
Thank you.